And now on Tucson Business Radio, let's find out how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise with your host, Karen Fisher.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. I am Karen Fisher. We are broadcasting live from the Tucson Business Radio X, which graciously is just right. It's housed in the corporate offices of Stewart Title. It's just a fantastic studio. I have an amazing group of guests with me today, and I'm going to say their names. I'm going to give a little tidbit about their bios and let them talk about some additional things that they have. So first and foremost, I would like to introduce, we've got Rebecca Black, who's published a phenomenal book called Facing the Elephants. Her story and her journey as what she has done throughout this world and the connection with the elephants and things that she's done to actually literally save your own life has been absolutely phenomenal. Chuck Palm is with us, and he owns the Chuck Palm. It's his coaching. I'm saying it wrong. No, I'm not. Palm Integrative Coaching. I should know that better by now. I'm fired. But Palm Integrative Coaching, and he is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force and has traveled all over the world and lived all over the world and was a Russian linguist. Maybe I can get him to say a few key Russian fun words because we have actually quite a big Russian population in Tucson. A lot of people don't know that.
You should have warned me. I would have practiced.
Oh, you would have practiced. Oh, I don't warn anybody. I just, you know, give everybody a hard time. I am Karen Fisher. I am your hostess. I am a senior loan officer with Summit Funding, and I like to remind people that I give money away and I have an unlimited supply. I do residential home loans anywhere in the state of Arizona, but if you need money someplace else, I've got connections throughout the world. And then our very own Mary Reed, who I'm super excited. She is... You're, in essence, running TEDx Tucson, which is phenomenal, but you have an amazing story that many people may know about, but maybe they don't. You were one of the victims in the shooting with Gabrielle Giffords, and how you took something so negative and turned it to something so positive and making a difference in this world is absolutely huge. And then we've got Heather Strickland, who is an attorney that specializes in several areas, but particularly in, I'm going to read it, assisted reproduction, adoption, LGBTQ family formation, and the most recent accolades is that you are the winner of Southern Arizona's 2019 Woman of Influence Legal Champion. I love that.
Wow.
Yes, yeah,
thank
we
you.
Do this.
Congratulations.
So with all of this, so those listeners that are regular listeners, they know that this is like a fireside chat. We just happen to be recording it. I always like to have some fun questions. And one of the questions that I would like to start off with, and anybody just pop in there, is that what drives you and fuels you to do what you do?
For me, it's my love of my beautiful, kind city. Tucson is an absolutely magical place. And after the Gabrielle Giffords shooting, I had strangers invite me to go before them in the grocery store because they were concerned about me. I had people that brought meals to me without knowing me and without knowing my family. So during my recovery from being shot three times,
While protecting your daughter.
Protecting my then 17-year-old daughter. Yeah. Yes, she was unharmed. But I wanted to give back, and I thought, I want to share the magic of Tucson. And I thought TED Talks would be the absolute most perfect way.
I just love it. And for the listeners who don't know what TED Talks is, it is there are so many guests that are on there, and you can download the information. And we're going to talk more about what's happening with TED Talks, with TEDx right here in Tucson. It's very, very exciting. So Rebecca, you pop in.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, it is ensuring that women in this community are provided with the best information available to them so that they can make the best decisions for themselves with respect to whether or not they're going to parent a child, and if they choose adoption, to be making the best choice for them and for their child. So for me, it's empowering women and knowing that they're going to get unbiased and non-judgmental information.
That is huge. And the other thing is you're definitely a true expert in the law, because it's very, very complicated. My cousin has, they have four children that are foster adopts. Three were from the same family. They were jokingly called the foster fails. And then a little boy, his name is Matt, but we love calling him Matt Man. He's Matt Man, and he wears the bat. He's like, it is not Batman, it is Matt Man. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool.
That's really sweet. To jump on the female empowerment, for me, it really is about that. Moving forward, writing this book was really about me finding my voice and my ability to share my story, which has led to so many women amongst all kinds of people sharing their stories with me and not feeling afraid. And that's huge.
Well, and tell a little bit of the snippet of your story, because the book is fabulous. I mean, as far as it's facing the elephants, and I know I have, and she very graciously gave me a gift of the book, and I'm like super excited.
It's funny, breaking it down, I guess it's about a lot of things. So I always categorize it and just say it's about my life. But it's about facing the scary BRCA mutation, which I have, BRCA1 mutation, and got a double mastectomy and oophorectomy, which means I had my ovaries removed. It's about, I almost died prior to that. I had an ovary rupture. I bled out. I had to have emergency surgery, a transfusion. It's about past trauma and living with PTSD, which I'm sure Mary can relate to. It's about dealing with mental health issues. It's about having doctors not listening to me because they would put me in kind of a categorical box.
Oh, you're too young for what was really happening.
Exactly.
That was part
too
of it,
young, yeah. Or I didn't understand, or, oh, that's typical for women. And you'd be surprised how many times I've heard that, and it's unfortunate. And then, out of the blue comes this family of elephants that gives me the will to live, and that's the most bizarre piece to the story. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yes. Well, and one of the things for me particularly is, and this is, so my husband and I were married for almost 10 years before Allison was born. We went through a series of miscarriages, and we didn't know if we'd ever be able to have children. And as, fast forward, went with the reproductive specialist, and we didn't have to do the in vitro, but we're that close, right? Well, the rest of the story is that the regular doctor that I had, she wasn't there that day, and there was somebody else that was there who possibly could be the one that was going to be delivering our child, right? And I overheard him say to the nurse, because I'd asked him some very detailed questions. Those of you that know me, imagine that. Very detailed questions. And I overheard him saying, "We have another one who reads all the time."
Oh, my goodness.
I got up, put my clothes on, and washed out. And, I'm not real tall, but I'm really loud. And I said, excuse me, I'm leaving right now, and I'm leaving the practice right now, and you need to know why. Because if you ever question somebody's ability to ask for information, you are in the wrong profession.
God forbid you advocate for yourself.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Doctors especially, it's been my thing where, when I was younger, all I heard was she doesn't know anything about herself because she's not old enough yet to understand. And then once I got a little older and started to read up on conditions and read journals and health studies, and then I'd go to a doctor and ask informed questions, you need to get off the internet. Okay, which one do you want? Do you want me to advocate for my health, or do you want me to sit back and let you tell me what to do? It's a double-edged sword sometimes.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And for
yeah.
the women that I represent who are going to the hospital and either giving birth to a child that they're going to be placing for adoption, or they're delivering the child that is somebody else's, The hospital staff and the doctors are always questioning and doubting their choice and their decision-making and not respecting their the fact that they are individuals who are capable of making these difficult choices and have made these choices, and they need to be respected for them.
Absolutely. And how about you?
We ended up going around the table.
Oh, we did. We didn't mean to, but yes.
So as a coach, I do focus on really helping people today, but you're asking about what's the motivation. And one of the things that really kind of spurred me on to understanding how somebody could need support, whether it's through coaching or counseling or something else, was something that happened to me a long time ago. When I was 22, my wife was 23. My son was born, and my wife didn't survive longer than a month afterwards. And the thing that was good for me about that moment was I was in the Air Force, and I had a natural support system built around me that I didn't recognize at the time and really didn't know how to usefully use as a young guy in the military.
Yeah, imagine that, being in your 20s and a dad.
Well, you're just doing what you have to do, right?
And surely you must have babysat all through your high school years, and you were given the manual as how to be the perfect parent.
That's right. He was the first baby I ever watched, and that sort of thing. But as I got older and I started seeing a lot more of my fellow vets getting out, and then as I got into the real world of work, it's the real world when you're not in the military, right? I realized that the whole notion of transition, whether it's transitioning through something that's pretty horrific in terms of your health or something that happened to your family, or transitioning from career to career, or even now helping business owners and all that kind of grow or change or something like that, it is good to have a third person give you that point of view and maybe offer some support as well. And so for me, it really kind of comes from a kind of a deeper well of just trying to help people, you know, fix their timelines or you manage their days or something like that.
I think it's huge. And part of the thing for me on a personal basis, one of the reasons that I do what I do is that we live in an amazing town, yes, and also an amazing country, because think about this. The majority of the world does not have any private property rights. Like, you can't buy or own property, the majority of the world. And even in some of the countries where you can have private property rights, a lot of those are reserved for only maybe 5% of the population. Because, for example, I have a sister that lived in Mexico for 30 plus years, sister-in-law, who lived in Mexico for about 30 plus years, and they did own their home. But all of the mortgages there were adjustable rate mortgages, and they ranged anywhere from 5% to 300% interest at any given time. And so basically what you do is you work and 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 you work, and you pay that house off, because the mortgages, they just don't have the secondary market that we have to support as far as financial. And then in addition, bare bones minimum, you're putting 50% down. And that, so having the ability, and there's something about home ownership that just changes a person and it changes a family. And to have, I flash back to my clients that, you know, I always keep their information super confidential, but I flash back to some of my clients that they're the first ones in their generation, maybe 3-4 generations of buying their first home, or now they're doing investment properties and they're able to understand how to do it correctly, and they're able to retire from their day job that maybe they weren't impassioned with, and doing some amazing things. So it's pretty, that's what drives me. So anyhow, so let's get into some fun things. So I've got some fun questions here, and I will start with Chuck on this one, because this is one of the greatest metaphors I've had. You got the waters and the balloons. Right. So let's talk about this. It's really fun to do this for a group of people. You should have him on stage for TEDx.
It doesn't make for great radio.
Oh, it doesn't make for great radio, but it's very fun.
To actually do it, but...
We'd ruin all the mics for sure.
We would make him very angry.
Yes. There you go.
So what I hear a lot from people like you around the table is because of what you're doing and who you are, you have a lot of things going on generally. And so we tend to mix up what's the most important thing versus what is not more important than that. And we end up doing a lot of tasks in a day. And a lot of my clients are asking me, so what's the tool, what's the app, what's the thing that I need to do to fix it, right? Is there a list? Is there something I need to do? So the metaphor that I use is actually an active one. So just imagine if you were all given a balloon or two right now, and I just asked you to just keep them in the air, just bounce them in the air. Don't let them hit the ground. In fact, the game goes, if the balloon does hit the ground, the balloon's dead. Can't pick it back up, balloon's dead. So you're like, okay, no problem. We are doing this. Okay, also, you all have a cup of water in front of you. After every bounce of the balloon, you have to take a drink of water. There's no option. You have to take a sip of water. If you don't sip your water, you die. You're out of the game altogether. So you'll have people do this. It doesn't take long before there's water everywhere. People are putting the glasses of water down, just bounce the balloons, or people are just stopping altogether and just drinking water. The metaphor is really simple, right? What's the balloon and what's the water? And in fact, it's more to the point, what's your water? Your water is the thing that's most important for you, either in your business or your life or something like that. Are you not drinking the water, or are you spilling that water, or are you like half filling that water just so you don't spill it or something else because you got to keep those balloons a-bouncing, right? And actually what Karen asked me to talk about today was, how do you keep the balloons bouncing and keep your water? And I think that's what a type A person would actually ask every single time.
Yes.
But to the point of what I do with coaching all the time is I simply just ask questions. What is important to you? Not that I want somebody to get rid of everything that's sort of a balloon or a task in their life, but rather focus. I wrote a couple of words down before we started here, and one of them is intention. The whole idea of a person's life to live to their fullest is to live with intention, not just letting it happen to you. And I think we could all kind of get behind that sort of thing. But the thing that limits us the most often and helps us, keeps us from really recognizing the balloons from the water is fear. We're either fearful that something's not going to happen, or we're afraid something is going to happen. And just working within that space of understanding what fear is to me, what's important to me, and intentionally trying to achieve something in the day is important to me, and that's what I try to help other people do. And because I want to listen to you all a lot, I'm trying to get this out. I think we live in that space of fear where when we don't really know what's going to happen next, right? We know what's happened before. We don't know exactly what's going to happen next, and we're in that liminal space between the two. And it's when you're in flux, you don't quite know where something's coming from or where it's going in your day or in your career or something. That's when the fear can kind of get the most of us.
And paralyzes. Yeah. For a lot of people, the deer in the headlight, or a friend of mine used to call it MIGO, my eyes glazed over.
Right. Well, you either get paralyzed or you're impulsive, right? You impulsively jump to a new job, or you jump to another thing, or you jump to another app. And that's when you're not really using the intentional part of your brain. So that's kind of where I come from with this whole thing. The key for me is to ask people, you know, what's your water?
What's your water?
Yeah.
That's a great metaphor. I like that. Because as you were describing it, I'm sitting there thinking, well, I'd ask for somebody to help me bounce the balloon, but I forgot all about the water in the metaphor while you're describing it. So that's just interesting to me.
Because you find out a lot about yourself just even thinking about the metaphor.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, my whole goal, you know, I used to live in that fear, in that cloudy space where I couldn't see. And, you know, that comes from a long time of being kind of boxed in or coached into that corner where you feel like you have to live that way. And putting myself out there, I've learned that it is scary and you do have to take risks, but overall it pays off and it makes the future so much clearer. And for me, it's a huge goal of mine to just help people see that I'm taking risks. I'm putting myself out there. I'm being scary for you so that it's less scary for you to be you.
I think paving that path and as far as with the information, I think that piece is absolutely huge. I mean, because you're demonstrating that, okay, in spite of, you know, so yes, all of this happened, but this is what I did. And so facing the fear, tell us a little bit about the elephants themselves, just because they're so phenomenal.
So the literal elephants, I decided when I couldn't go back to my career, to my old lifestyle, which was kind of within the criminal justice element. I was working with child services. I had a degree in criminal justice. I had worked with the county attorney's office, so on and so on. It was too much for me. My childhood had a lot of trauma involved. I was a survivor of sex abuse and trafficking.
Oh, boy.
Which is what stemmed most of the PTSD. Having that physical health issue come up later is what opened the floodgates. So moving forward, I said, I need something in my life that's positive, that's different, that's out of my usual comfort zone. I need something that's going to inspire me. And I've always loved elephants. I've always been connected to them in some way. Ever since I was a child, I've found comfort in just their image. So when I found out that there was an opportunity here at our beautiful Reed Park Zoo's elephant exhibit to volunteer, I was ecstatic. Absolutely. So I applied. I got in right away. I was thrilled. It's hard work. Please don't just jump in and sign up if you're not ready for our beautiful Tucson hot sun and summer days of shoveling and raking and some serious labor.
It's true muck.
But, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, and I was in heaven. I was in heaven, and it happened after what I call the crash of 2014, which is actually chapter one in my book. It was the first set of health trauma that I had, and I started working with them, and their family is amazing. The stories behind those elephants, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Reed Park Zoo and the elephants, but the two females there, Langili and Samba, were actually rescues from Africa because their parents had been poached. Their mothers had been poached, and so they were flown here from Africa, originally arriving in Florida, then in San Diego, and then eventually to Tucson, where we were blessed with them. Lingili's unable to have babies, but Samba is capable and has had all of her children with Mabu, who is now here temporarily, and is pregnant again. Yay.
Oh, super excited. Yes. I did not know that.
They waited a while to confirm but it's been confirmed.
Nandi, I'm saying it wrong.
Nandi is four now.
I was addicted when Nandi was born.
Well, there's going to be another one in about 2-ish years.
Can you imagine being pregnant that long? Oh, my goodness.
I really can't.
On the worst side, could you imagine giving birth to a 200-pound baby? No. But, you know, they're fascinating. They're fascinating the way that they just love each other and take care of each other. Langili acts as a great aunt. The babies, the children, you know, they're all fantastic. I mean, it's just a beautiful family, and I was blessed to work with them for a period that truly inspired me and kept me going.
That is just huge. And see, it all segues as far as family and trauma. So.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yes, I was just thinking about, you're telling the story about the elephants that have essentially formed a new family. They have no blood relations.
Right.
But they have been brought together under circumstances, and they've managed to form a family and support one another and inspire other people. And that's the definition of family, the people that are around you and support you and love you. And it's not necessarily about blood connection.
No, and that's exactly what you do. You help create those families. And I love that. You know, when I used to work in child services, seeing stuff like that happen, you know, those children that needed new homes and found the homes through different opportunities in families and watching those attorneys help them out was just, there's nothing better than that.
Yes, I'm absolutely very lucky to get to do what I do. I have a lot of people who say to me, you're so lucky that you practice happy law. And I've learned to approach that and say, I'm going to challenge you on that and say, I actually practice hopeful law. These situations that bring people to adoption, whether it's a child who's had to be removed from their family or a woman who's finding herself in a position where she can't care for a child, these aren't happy things. But what we're hoping for is a hopeful outcome and a better outcome for them. And so that's why I like to say that it's hopeful law, not necessarily happy law.
Right.
I just, and you know, as far as your background and your history, you've been doing this for better than 15 years. So what drove you, what brought you into this area of law? Because, you know, you finish law school and there's a whole plethora of options for you.
Absolutely. I started in family law, which is divorce and paternity actions, child custody cases. And then I had the opportunity to represent a woman who came to my law firm and said that she was interested in placing her baby for adoption. And it was a really moving experience for me to watch this woman make this incredible, selfless decision for her child, for herself, for her other children. And I was just really inspired by her and the choice that she was making, and realized that I wanted to continue to work with women who were making that very difficult choice, provide them with ethical representation, with unbiased representation, non-judgmental representation. So it was just happened to come into my office, and so I got to represent one woman. And in doing so, I met my former law partner, Scott Myers. And he looked at me and said, you're my retirement plan.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there you go.
And
okay.
So that's how we eventually became law partners. And then he did retire, and I'm now running the practice as a solo practitioner.
Well, one of the things that I know about adoption law, which, you know, just very, very surface, just because of people who have either chosen to give their child up for adoption or lot of friends and family members that have children that they have adopted, that it's very complicated. Like the legal process, it's very, very complex. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Absolutely. It's not something that you're going to go into without the support of an attorney. And often you need the support of more than one attorney. You need one to represent the adoptive parents. You need one to represent the woman who's placing her child for adoption. It doesn't necessarily mean that the attorneys are adversarial. It is a collaborative and cooperative process, but you need to make sure that everybody is being represented individually and without any kind of potential conflict. It absolutely is complicated. It can involve multiple states. Let's say you've connected with an expectant mother who resides in a different state, and it involves multiple parties. You have your expectant mother, you have potential birth fathers. And so there's a lot of complexities and a lot of things that need to occur to make sure that this process is handled appropriately. It is a legal process, and so we have to make sure that there's the opportunity to meet the legal requirements, that we handle everything ethically and upfront, so that we can ensure that there's a really, truly legally secure adoption at the end.
So I'm not trying to get free legal advice here, but...
but I will.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But.
So my son and his husband just moved to Virginia, and they're thinking about adoption. What should be the first thing they do?
I think they should consult with a local adoption attorney. That adoption attorney is going to be able to connect them with resources in their community that can help them gain the knowledge they need to decide the pathway they wish to go in adoption. So whether that's learning what kinds of adoption agencies exist in his community, which ones are going to be willing to work with his family, and whose practices and philosophies match the philosophies of him and his husband as well. So it's absolutely worth talking to an attorney, especially because an attorney is not going to be biased. They're not going to work for adoption agencies or adoption facilitators or people who are only interested in getting the business, that they can truly represent them and talk to them about what their interests are.
So just Googling it's not good enough?
It is. Yeah. Googling is absolutely part of the process. Okay. You have to learn to advocate for yourself, as you said before. But there, that's absolutely talking with a quality an attorney who has experience is a great way to start. I'm a fellow of the Academy of Adoption and Assisted Reproduction Attorneys. They have a fantastic website, and you can find a list of attorneys around the country who do focus their practices in this area, both adoption and assisted reproduction.
Well, and then in terms of the family, there's also something you have in common. Your husband is he's in the military now still?
Yes, he has now changed over to the Air National Guard.
Oh, okay.
But he was active duty for 15 years. So while during our marriage. And so I have gone through 4 deployments, and he's actually going to go on another one this summer.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. So family, well, you're part of this. You've adopted all of Tucson as your family. We'll start there. But you're bringing people, and I'm just letting you know, you tell us about TEDx and what's happening, the dates and the fun things that are happening.
So we have a yearly conference, and it's September 21st. And you can go to our website, TEDxTucson.com, and get tickets. But we are exploring the line between revolution and evolution. And it started in that I was speaking with an astronomer who has found a fundamentally unique galaxy. And I said, oh, this is revolutionary. And she says, no. I'm trying just to evolve our understanding. And I thought, oh, how odd. And the more I spoke with people about what is the difference between evolving how you think and having a revolution of understanding. And so we have 9 speakers and 3 performances that will be exploring that from all sorts of points of view, a documentary filmmaker who she wins so many awards. She just finished producing The Long Shadow, and it's a history of racism. She's a white woman from the South, and she wants to start examining everyday racism. And what do we need to evolve our understanding, or do we just need to break and have a revolution of understanding? We have a different astronomer who studies hydrogen clouds, and she wants a revolution in being able not just to see stars, which are objects, but she wants to see individual atoms and molecules in order to understand the universe. So we will have Ryan Hood, which if you've never heard them, they're an amazing folk duo that tells just gorgeous stories, and they're musicians that are just out of this world. And then,
well, real quick, I have to segue on that. I don't know if you realize this, but my nephew's wife, the nephew that you know,
yes,
is so Sarah. That's Sarah's brother, Ryan Hood.
Mm.
So that's just I'm telling you, to like Tucson, just a little teeny tiny.
It really
place.
Is.
And then finally, one of my secret pleasures is Mexican masked wrestling. And and I feel like we live at the border, and you can go to Japan, and Mexican mask wrestling is a huge deal in Japan and a huge deal in Europe. And yet we're right here, and we don't even understand that it is a tradition that comes from the theater. It is athletic. It is storytelling. It is amazing. Visually, they tell you a story. They tell you a story through words and actions. And I want to teach people how to see what the rest of the world already knows about Mexican masked wrestling.
Luchadors are really cool.
They are amazing.
So what is that? I don't even know what that is.
So unfortunately in the U.S., most of us have seen, what's the movie? Lucha, No.
Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre.
I knew exactly what you're talking about.
With the stretchy pants. And the luchadors, they wear masks and complete costumes. And if you've been watching Luchador, you know who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. And they have a storyteller that talks about what has happened in the past and what is happening now. And they execute these athletic stage fighting moves that are just amazing. And they tell a story. The audience is part of the story.
Oh, that is... Okay, did you guys know about this?
I'm embarrassed to say I'm a Tucson native and I've never heard of it, so I'm going to be doing some Googling
after
this.
And you should, because we have one of the most well-known athletes, wrestlers, here in Tucson. And people just don't know.
They don't know.
And so I thought, okay, well, we'll bring this to the stage, and then we'll have over hors d'oeuvres, we'll have an actual match, you know, outside.
Oh, this is going to be so much fun.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So when you were a little girl, did you think that you would be championing this sort of entertainment?
When I was a little girl, the sad thing is that I was such a nerd that rather than join the theater department, I started the computer club so I could teach people how to help me solder. And that was in 1972. And so all of my friends who joined the theater club call me and taunt me.
Oh, there you go.
So most of my career was as a production software manager for companies like Apple.
I think that sounds progressive, not nerdy.
There you go. Well, it's really funny because as far as with numbers, I'm a numbers person. I'm a numbers geek. I've said it before that I love the concept of 212. And I'm going to repeat it because I just think it's so much fun. But you think about this. At 211 degrees Fahrenheit, water is hot. At 212 degrees Fahrenheit, water boils. And with boiling water comes steam. And with steam, you can power a freight train across the United States. And it's just 1 degree different. And that is such a... I use that metaphor very, very often because it's like, what am I doing to move the needle in any area of my life that I want to do? That 1 degree. Because, like we're talking about with the balloons and the water, you're in the midst of this whirlwind in your life of everything that's going on. And then yet, if you really study the people that get things done in business, get things done in their lives, it's not about multitasking. In fact, multitasking, they've got a lot of evidence that it actually is counterproductive.
And that it's not even true. Most of the time, we're trying to do more than one thing, but we're only doing one thing at a time, usually poorly.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is that 1 degree for you, any one of you, pop in here, that 1 degree for you of saying, okay, what narrows your focus and what do you do?
Adderall.
Adderall. Seriously? Okay. That's, you know.
But for me, it's just... I'm a visual kinesthetic person. I have to write a list, and then I have to have the satisfaction of scratching it off.
Do you add things to your list to scratch them off?
No.
I do that.
I don't.
Oh, I do. Oh, yes.
I'm a purist.
Oh, okay. So if you didn't come up with the list at first, then, you know, okay.
Yeah, no.
I would say mine is sleep.
Sleep.
Getting plenty of sleep will just help me take it up that one notch.
For me, it was the last straw.
Really?
I went my whole life. I did everything I said I was going to do. I grew up better than my family. I graduated. I went to college. I got into the career path I wanted. I volunteered within all the local venues that I thought would make the career difference. I did all these things. And then out of nowhere, I had that breakdown. It was the last straw for me. It was the thing that threw me down, that actually made me write a book, that actually made me change my life. And now people hear me. Now, what really matters in my life wasn't all that stuff. Nobody cares about my degree. Nobody cares about the work I used to do. What they care about is hearing the things that I went through that changed my life, because it empowers them to speak up and change theirs. So for me, it was the last straw. So what's your last straw? That's what I ask.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. What is your last straw? You know, to me, on a personal basis, I am on a mission to make a difference, a positive difference in people's lives, because my voice was, you know, everybody has the story. I always think of, you know, my story from the movie that the jerk that Steve Martin was in, my story. It's like, that's what I feel like it. But, you know, part of that is that, so historically, like I'm the first girl born in three generations. They didn't know what to do with me. My mother and father put me in gymnastics because I climbed. I look back on it, I would probably have been the kid that would have been on ADHD drugs. But I seriously, as far as that energy. And it's funny that I'm hosting a radio show and I speak for a living and have spoken internationally. But if you look at my first grade report cards, you know, Karen would do very well if she didn't talk so much, you know, and quiet that voice down, make your voice. You're so loud, Karen, quiet down. Wait a second. No, I have something to say and I'm going to be respectful, but I have something to say. And the last straw for me is somebody telling me that I couldn't do something because I came from a broken home and you know, you can't do that. Oh, yeah? Oh, I just did it. That's for me.
I love that.
Oh, I was going to mention about being in that one degree space, that possible steam moment, or the stay hot water moment. There's no perfect way for that, but I think the problem I've ever had with that period, regardless of what the issue is not recognizing I'm in that place. All I know is
that
I'm not feeling good. It's not right. I'm not comfortable with this job. I'm not comfortable with what's happening. She said something, I'm not sure what it was, but man, it just kind of got to me. And I've found out almost every single time that the way I was feeling was a real reaction to something. I just didn't recognize it yet. And maybe I hadn't taken a second to think about it much. So usually when I've felt that way and I step back and maybe I talk to my wife or talk to somebody else, I start figuring it out. You know, as soon as it starts coming out of me verbally, I start figuring it out. But if I keep it to myself, it just kind of just feels bad for as long as it needs to feel bad, I guess. But it's understanding that gut feeling you have actually is a real thing.
Well, and listening to it, because listening to our gut and doing, you know, not ignoring what we're being told, and then, you know, that litmus test of, you know, yes, it's good to get advice and counsel, obviously, but you need to make your decision. That's when you talk about non-judgmental.
Right.
And then you talking about bringing ideas that aren't like, how are you thinking? Or, you know, what conversation are you having? What are you talking about? Are we in a place where somebody could agree to disagree? Right now, it doesn't seems to me that we've got all these like little crazy sound bites instead of having meaningful conversations. It's like, tell me more.
Right. And TEDx Tucson, that is our primary goal, is to show Tucson to Tucson in order to deepen community conversation. Because conversation is the only way we can try on an idea and decide for ourselves. All these little snips and bites, really, it feels like a snowball fight to me. It does not feel as if we're actually trying on an idea and just sitting with it and say, not quite, that idea quite doesn't quite resonate with, oh, but if I just look at it this way, oh, I see. And I miss having conversation.
I think one thing that you offer through this kind of series is an opportunity to have open and open-ended civil discourse on something.
Exactly.
Kind of an old salon style, right?
And in fact, our evening programs, surprisingly enough, are called salons for that exact reason, that listening to leading minds in the Tucson region and then sitting down over maybe a glass of wine and some hot hors d'oeuvres to have a conversation is deeply moving.
That's why Tucson is called the Paris of the West, right? Because of the salons that we have.
I love that. I love
Paris of the West. Yeah. I'm going to have to try that one on for a while.
I'm excited by this concept because I look at that as your TEDx talks as an opportunity to put those balloons down that you were talking about and have a conversation with somebody without the distractions.
Savor the water.
Exactly. Savor the water. I prefer the wine if you don't mind.
Yes, yeah.
and again, engage and have conversations with people without the distraction of balancing those balloons all the time.
And I find that with the balloons, we don't think deeply about what we believe and we don't think carefully about the data that we're looking at.
But we got a lot of tweets out. That's what's important.
Yeah. It just as far as the information, it was really funny that just as far as that conversation and how do you have it's interesting, even just the family dinner table just doesn't seem to exist in a lot of cases, but that was not true in our household, just the way that we brought up our daughters now. She's 27. She's getting her doctorate in mathematics from Washington State University. Oh, and she was told in the second grade by her teacher that, you know, girls just aren't good in math. This is not that long ago. You know, she was only born. And I'm like,
crazy.
You have to be careful because as a parent, you know, you might win that battle with the teacher, but you're not going to win the war if they're the teacher that's with your child, you know, the whole school year. So I had this great advice and counsel from somebody who knew her said, this is what you do. You take her and you get her tested, which she's going to test off the charts for math. We already knew it. This kid understood algebraic concepts when she was like three. It was like scary. And when she tests off, then you take the test results to the teacher and you let her know, stop, let him know, stop letting her slide. And that's what we did. And so now I think about that. I'm like, what if I hadn't been that parent who questioned that authority? Because the teacher's still the authority figure, right? And here she is getting her doctorate in applied mathematics with an emphasis in computational neuroscience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't even fit on an application. So, you know,
that's
the things,
fabulous.
Yeah, what you were told as far as what you were supposed to do. And
well, challenging that authority is probably what changed your daughter's life. I mean, moving forward with that instinct and making sure that you did what she needed. That's just amazing. Not everybody can do that right off the bat.
No, they can't. But advocating for each other, advocating for each other to allow people to be heard, I think is very, very important. So with the blend families and things like that, so one of the things, the rest of the story, you do know that Chuck's first wife passed away very, very young, but you remarried and you have a blended family, Marie.
Marie Marcus and I.
Yeah.
31 years married.
Yeah.
It all works out. Right?
Right.
You can create new things. You just have to decide to do it. One thing that came to mind, though, with this discussion is I've spent a lot of years also working in public health. And there's this, one of the many public health theories is like a trans-theoretical model. And that involves the different concentric circles within which an individual is living. And I think some of the things that have been described here have really described it takes more than just the individual wanting to make a change or to do wanting to do something. It requires a system in place to allow that to happen in many cases. So in your daughter's case, Karen, I think she was lucky that in her first circle around her, she had somebody who felt the gut and took action. But a lot of folks don't have that, or they're in a community that doesn't support that sort of thing. And I think working with families and trying to help create new blended families, you're also working within that big policy ring and trying to help stab through it to allow families to kind of do things. I guess my whole point is that it's not just somebody wanting or needing to do something. It takes a little bit more of opportunity, of support, and of your own chutzpah to make it happen. Because I can't imagine you getting through the physical and emotional things that you had to do to make it all happen. And I'm talking to Rebecca, to the radio folks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was sitting here thinking about that, Chuck, about all of us sitting around this table, Karen included, that we are all here doing different things in this community because of a single moment in our lives that kind of created a butterfly effect. Whether it was something that inspired you, whether it was something that was traumatic, whether it was something that changed your outlook, whether it was something you were told you couldn't do, we're all here creating a way for people to be inspired or to be encouraged or to be assisted somehow that's going to help change their life. And I think that, you know, that goes far beyond this table.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm so happy that I got to be here today to meet these people because, you know, with each and every one of you that tells your story, I'm always impressed by people's stories. It always makes me feel that deep feeling, you know, where you get moved and you want to be more. And I think that all people have that in them. So the more we talk, like Chuck says, when you have that circle of people around you, the more you grow. That those rings continue.
Well, and one of the things I want to make sure as far as our time is that we give our listeners, because this does get podcasted, it can be forwarded and replayed, and that ripple effect. I know, like with TEDx, I'm looking at this. This is huge. 100 videos with over 5.6 million views. That just is so exciting. I love it.
It's not just friends and family.
Yeah. Yes. I love it. There's a little fist bump going on. Yeah. But I would love for people to be able, if you can share with them how they can talk to you and how they can get involved. Like the one thing about TEDx Tucson is that you are a 501(c). So I know that, I mean, living in the nonprofit world, I know that there's a lot of support that you could use. Like, yes, you've guys got it going on, but you could use some support. And yeah. Tell us what that support would look like.
We have two ways to support TEDx Tucson. No one gets paid at TEDx Tucson, no volunteers, no one on stage. And so we can always welcome more volunteers, but we also look for sponsors because we want to be as inclusive as possible and includes as many diverse groups within Tucson. So in-kind services or cash donations are ever so gratefully received.
Fantastic. And the best way for them to get a hold of you or TEDx Tucson?
Is by our website, TEDxTucson.com. We also have all of our connections on social media on the notes for this podcast.
Fantastic.
Anyone is welcome to call my office at any time, which is 520-327-6041. Also, my website.
Please repeat the number because I know that's like people like to rewind it and then write it down again.
That's 520-327-6041. Also, my website, ArizonaAdoptionLaw.com, has a lot of great information as well. It's a great starting place for families that are just considering their options for how they're going to create their family.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
For me, anybody who would like to contact me, you can go through my website, which is authorrebeccablack.com.
And how are you spelling Rebecca? Because I know
they missed. Oh, that's true. Oh,
yes. Right. Yeah.
It's R-E-B-E-C-C-A. So authorrebeccablack.com. And you can check out my website, order a book, email me, however you'd like to do it.
And the book is, just to remind our listeners, the book is called Facing the Elephants, and again, written by Rebecca Black. And so I'm super excited I knew the story, the background story, I should say, but super, super excited to have the book. Thank you.
For me, it's just palm, as in a palm tree. Okay, so my father, the whole time I was growing up, he always was having to give his name over the phone. He was also Charles Palm. He'd be like, yes, my name is Charles Palm, palm like a palm tree. And for the longest time, I always associated Palm like a palm tree as being my actual last name. Anyway, palm-coaching.com.
Very good. And then I am Karen Fisher. I am with Summit Funding. So even though I'm a loan officer, I am really a number in terms of the federal law. So my NMLS number is 180167. That's 180167. And you can actually go on NMLSConsumerAccess.com and you can pull up my resume and pull up a lot of information about me. But the best way to reach me is my direct line, which is 520-447-2279. That's 520-447-2279. And just in terms of closing thoughts, we're almost up. This always blows everybody away that it's an hour. We're almost done. I would love to ask everybody this roundtable, well, two questions. One, and you'll know my evil, wicked sense of humor when I say, what's your favorite color? And where the movie comes from. So what's your favorite color?
Blue.
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 Rainbow.
Rainbow.
Pink.
Pink. I'm blue. So it's really funny as far as the favorite color. And then the other thing is what would yourself right now tell your 5 or 10-year-old self?
Enjoy life more.
Yeah. Read more books.
Play outside more. Mm-hmm.
Joy is always found right in front of you.
And I would tell my young self that, yes, you can.
That's great.
Are we good? So, Mark, are we set? We're done, aren't we? We've got a few more minutes. Oh, that means we get to have another of a little bit more time. So tell us the dates as far as with the I'm saying it wrong. It's the actual show, the big event that you're having with
our
conference. Yes, the conference.
It's Revolution Evolution. It will be September 21st, which is the fall equinox.
And it's being held at?
The Burger Theater.
Fantastic.
And it's a beautiful theater. We take over both the theater and about 5 or 6 acres of the grounds, because it's an immersive conference, which means that we have artists and sculpture gardens, and for the price of the ticket, you get lunch so you don't have to leave, and you get hors d'oeuvres and an after party, and you'll get to see a Mexican masked wrestling match, and we have little mini seminars, and it's just an amazing event.
So, and what are the cost of the tickets?
The tickets are $90 at the door, but if you are an early bird before August 30th, they're only $75. We also have tickets for seniors as well as for military.
So tell me about if you're a military or a senior, what those prices are. And what's the definition of senior? That seems to be
right. Or
constantly moving.
Or so, of military.
So military is military ID. Okay. We make it simple. Senior is 65. We make that easy as well. And that would be $65.
So I would imagine that you might have some people that are there sponsorship opportunities for the tickets?
There are lots of different types of sponsorship opportunities. You can help sponsor the conference so that we can keep our prices so low. But also, we have people that have a passion for underserved communities, like K-12 teachers, and we actually have sponsors that come in and say, I want to buy
a block of tickets,
and it has to be K-12 teachers. We ask them what schools they'd like us to advertise in and give those away. So we have different types of opportunities.
It's super exciting that this is in our city, and thank you for taking this on. I mean,
it's been such an adventure.
And how about you? What are the plans and things that you've got going on? And what's the one tip that you would say to some of our families
who are interested in creating their families?
Creating their family.
I think is have an open mind. There's a lot of opportunities that are going to reveal themselves to you, but you have to have an open mind. You have to trust the process, and you have to take a leap of faith, and just go with it.
Well, in addition, as far as with the book's on Amazon. Is that right? Or
it's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
And then one of the things that's kind of exciting that I've seen recently is that with the sales tax initiative that came through the city of Tucson, there's been a lot of funding that has come through the Reed Park Zoo. And so you guys know one of the most fun things to do around Tucson in the summer is the nights, the zoo nights. So that's fantastic. Chuck,
so I don't have a book to pitch or a TEDx conference to pitch, but when people go to my website, they'll be able to find out upcoming trainings and seminars that I work with.
Well, we are super excited that everybody was here. Spread the word, and I'm very grateful for all of you being this guest and having fun around this roundtable.